This podcast is a part of the Carbon Almanac Network of Podcasts.
And today we are talking about
nuclear fusion.
Nuclear fusion.
Yeah. Okay, we're recording this episode in December. This is the second week of December, and this episode will probably be released in January. But something major broke the news two days ago. So tell us more.
The real definition of a news flash.
Right. Well, I think, you know, it's exciting. Some U.S. scientists, although I will give a quick shout out here. Some people have commented and noted that there's a number of groups in Europe also working and were near this kind of milestone as well. But maybe the war in Ukraine slowed down some of their progress. But for the moment, here in December, some U.S. scientists have achieved what's called ignition in a fusion reaction, which sort of overcome this ignition barrier. We'll come back and dive a little bit into fusion, but it sort of means that they produced more energy than it took to create that amount of energy creation. And so that's a super exciting milestone. You know, I've listened to podcasts only 4 or 5 months ago that were all about fusion, and it was like, well, it's always only 10 years away before we're going to achieve this, you know, crossing this ignition energy barrier where we're actually drawing more power out of the reaction than went into creating the reaction. But here we are in December of 2022, and we've crossed that barrier. And it's super duper exciting. And I think holds, you know, a lot of exciting stuff for us to chat about here. You know, I guess I would turn and ask, Leaky, you know, you were sharing and sort of talking a little bit about the amount of energy in any one country driven by different sources of energy. And, you know, fusion is not one that's driving for any country right now, but something somewhat similar to fusion, nuclear power.
Yes.
Yeah. Is dominant in your country, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as you know, I'm in France, and in France, the source of energy is mainly nuclear because there was the oil crisis in the 70s, and the government decided to develop the nuclear energy sector. There was this very famous phrase that says, "Oh, en France, on n'a pas de pétrole, mais on a des idées," which means in France we have no oil, but we have lots of ideas. And the idea was to switch everything to nuclear power, and so. I think before all the problems in Japan, France was leading the nuclear energy sector, and I think that 70% of our energy comes from nuclear plants in France. It used to, not anymore, because a lot of them are being under repair these days. But this is something that we've been using for a while, and I know that's very controversial. It's a very controversial topic, but so far we didn't have any problem in France. I get very excited about the fusion, the nuclear fusion power, as opposed to fission, which is when you get the energy when you separate the atoms, right? So this is the energy that is used today. And the problem of it is that it creates a lot of waste. No, it creates waste. No, I shouldn't say a lot of waste. It creates waste, and it's difficult because it's potent for a long time, and there are accidents. Whereas the energy that comes from fusion is the energy that powers the sun. And this is the type of energy that comes from fusion. So from the atoms melting, and it's safer. And it seems to be an incredible source of energy that is that does not emit carbon. So it's clean energy. So there was a lot of hope. But as you said, we are maybe 10 years away. But, you know, I work a lot with engineering students. And they told me that this is a joke. And let me pull the joke. Among physicists, there's a joke that says, oh, nuclear fusion energy is 20 years away, and it will always be. Yeah, this is a joke because actually the technology, and again, I'm not a physicist, I'm not a scientist at all, but I know that this type of energy existed since the 50s. Basically, it comes from a bomb. It's a very, very powerful bomb. It's called H-bomb. It's a hydrogen bomb, which is like, I don't know how many times more potent than it is as compared to the atomic bomb, but it's really, really, really bad. But then we saw the potential in transforming it and in using it, this type of this technology, and to generate energy and to plug it into our grids. But there are a lot of problems that needs to be solved before that. So that's why it took so long.
Agreed. I was going to say, you know, just commenting back on the beginning part of your commentary there, Leaky, I'm here in the United States in New York, and I actually live near a nuclear power plant that is in the process, as many are in other parts of the world, of actually being decommissioned. And over concerns of their potential, you know, fallout kind of situation as it relates to, you know, systems failures. And so many around the world of this, what is otherwise a very clean type of energy source that doesn't contribute to our sort of the imbalance in our carbon cycle, many nuclear power plants are actually being decommissioned out of concerns over their age, their safety protocols, those kind of things. And I live in an area where, you know, my energy now is this power plant becomes decommissioned because we don't yet have a fusion replacement. Now that energy that I otherwise would be consuming in the people in the local area, including New York City, would be consuming, you're now going to come from other plants that might be natural gas powered or coal powered, you know, maybe a little bit of hydro, maybe a little bit of solar, a little bit of wind, but they all have those have other sort of negative impacts into this carbon cycle imbalance. And it's going to actually have an impact as well to the cost, right? Because the nuclear is actually was already built and very cost efficient, it's actually going to raise the electricity rate. Now, I happen to have a full solar array, so we're self-powered in my house, but most people aren't. And so it's interesting, I think one of the conversations around fusion comes back to the same thing. If you compare the different sources of energy out there in the marketplace, the cost to produce a kilowatt hour used as a standard measuring thing, you know, varies across these different technologies, nuclear, coal, natural gas-fired, hydro, wind, solar. And fusion holds the potential because, as you mentioned, the ingredients that go into making fusion work are readily, abundantly available and don't create this sort of like waste material that has to be dealt with depleted uranium does and those kind of impacts. And so it's readily available materials. And if we can get this equation right, or this is the great hope, is if we can get this balance right where less energy goes in, you know, two megajoules go in and we get 3 megajoules of energy out. Well, then that can be this sort of self-fulfilling, like, and then help start powering all the rest of it. But for right now, some of the commentary and have been around, you know, on this discovery as well. For right now, we actually have an amazing source of fusion power, and it's actually our sun. Our sun is producing fusion power every single day. I mean, today for me, it's very rainy and wet, and I don't see much of the fusion power. But it's producing all this fusion power there in the sun, which we receive as solar energy. And so I think there's a little bit of a question of like, what's going to happen with fusion? When does it come into play and become a cost affordable thing? And does it mean that we need to not be worried about our sources of energy and our carbon cycle imbalance now? And I turn to Jen, do you have thoughts on this?
Yeah, I was just doing a little research on what was happening where I am. I'm in Canada. I'm in Western Canada in British Columbia. And it seems that there are about 22 nuclear power reactors in Canada, but only 19 of them are working. And most of them are in Ontario, which is more central, eastern central. The one in Quebec decided to shut down about 10 years ago because of the same kinds of things that we had talked about safety and efficiency. And I know that here in British Columbia, we have a lot of water, and there's a big argument going on that it's been going on for years. Our government decided to purchase a pipeline, which caused a lot of controversy, and there are protests and there are all sorts of things going on. We've got a big dam that's being constructed in the north called the Site C Dam. And the idea is to dam a very powerful river for hydroelectric power. So there's a lot of power discussions, and so this caused me a bit of hope, especially given the reduction of carbon, like no carbon output, and the possibility that if we could do what we did with the pandemic and everybody jump on board and try and get this pushed farther ahead. You know, it seems to be like when there's an urgent matter, like the pandemic, sorry, that's Charlie shaking. Like the pandemic, where every scientist focused their energy and their money. If we could everyone, scientists everywhere, focus their energy and their money on this, then there's real hope.
Yeah.
For reducing our carbon and giving energy to everyone. And wow.
You know, Jim, there was a great little piece I read on the fundraising in 2022 as it relates to, there were 33 main companies that were sort of raising funds and focusing on fusion of meaningful size and fundraising scale. And the amount that was fundraised was a fraction of, I think it was in total $3 billion, if I recall correctly, but I could be slightly wrong on that. So don't quote me. But I do recall that it was a fraction, like less than 10% of the same amount of money raised for companies focusing on addressing like short-term delivery, like delivering restaurant food to your door and delivering packages to your door, and like technology around like Uber Eats. I don't know if you have these where you are, but things like Uber Eats or Grubhub or those things, like much more money, more than 10 times money was raised for those services in 2022 than for nuclear fusion. But this big milestone might change that. We may see a change in the future. So I'm hopeful that things do go in the direction that there's more funding, dollars, resources, you know, federal for, you know, every country, you know, dollars are allocated toward, and therewith, with the money goes the time and energy from scientists and engineers. I hope it does go that way.
Yeah, and I want to go back to the urgency that you mentioned, Jen. I said something that is not totally right, because when I said, oh yeah, well, in France, in Europe, we've been working on this topic for long, and it's been slowed down because of the war of Ukraine, which is partly true, but not totally true, because as you mentioned, Brian, there are different ways of of getting the potential of the nuclear fusion. And so it's true for one project, which is laser-based, which is based in France, in Bordeaux. And they were waiting for like steel delivery to work on the laser thing. But then there's another project, which is, and you probably have heard of it because it's an international project, which is called ITER, which stands for, hang on just 1 minute, stands for International Thermonuclear Experimental Reactor. And this is a project, it's an international project, and it has European Union, China, US, Russia, India. So a lot of countries are involved in this project. And they're building a new reactor. And this new reactor is based somewhere in France. And the test should start sometime in, it gets your dog very excited.
That wasn't mine, but...
Oh, get someone dog very excited. <That's okay. laughs> No, so the reactor was supposed to start operating in 2027 or 2025. And because of the urgency and because it's an international project, there was a lot of fear because Russia is part of this project. And this year, Russia has is supposed to deliver one of the magnets. One of the six magnets for this project, a big, very, very big magnet, because this is another technology that uses magnet. And actually, because there's an urgency and despite the war situation, they still delivered this magnet to this project. So I think this kind of agency goes beyond the war situation. So
yeah,
I think this is great.
That's great to hear. That may be a good moment, Leaky, to talk for a second about the different kinds of technical approaches to fusion, because, you know, and again, I'm also not a scientist, physicist, engineer, or expert in this, as none of us on this podcast are, but it is interesting because the ITER project you're referring to is following this method referred to as tokamak, where there are these really big magnetic components that create this sort of donut-shaped field. The plasma is moving around at super fast speed, constrained by the magnet, these tokamak magnets, these big things that Russia just delivered one of, which is great to hear. This newest breakthrough that just happened, you know, for us this week here in December, out at the Lawrence Livermore Labs, which I have to have a quick shout out. It just dawned on me. I actually have a coworker who works at Lawrence Livermore. So I've got to call him. He now works there. He worked many years ago, not on this project, on other things. But so the approach they did was a different kind of approach where they had all these lasers, 192 different lasers, all focused. And they do use magnets to create some magnetic field around it and create the precision. But it's not the same as the tokamak project, where they focus all these lasers at this little seed pellet and sort of like create all this pressure because all the lasers hit all at just the right second, all perfectly aligned and whatnot. So it's interesting because there's essentially two competing approaches to achieving this kind of ignition fusion energy. There's two different models at play here.
I would not say competing. I would say complementary. Because
yeah, complementary, right. But like... If like, you know, it's like in the early days of the invention of the bicycle, there were different like form factors that were being experimented with. And like, and we now have a current form factor that sort of became that, you know, under pressure of evolutionary pressures became the form factor that we all know today. But in the beginning, there were numerous different form factors that were, you know, being tested out and tried. And here we've got the ITER project is sort of one form factor. And the Livermore Labs project that just achieved this little milestone is a different form factor. It's like a different style of achieving the goal and structure. So it's exciting to see that there's more than one thing in motion, because it feels to me that that diversity of approach maybe hopefully will lead to even more likelihood of outcome of success.
Isn't that true of many things, like the radio and the light bulb? There were all sorts of things that were... being dreamed up in various places. And so it's funny how that all of a sudden breakthroughs happen in multiple places around the same subject. I think that's so amazing.
Yeah. I don't know if you, because we're talking now a lot about nuclear fusion in the past few days. And I don't know if you remember in Back to the Future, there was a scene where what's the name of the doc? Well, the doc goes to Marty and say, okay, well, I need to take you to the future because you know, there's an urgent matter that needs you to help solve. And so he has his car and he goes to the garbage and picks some garbage and put into like a kind of grinder in his car. And this grinder is attached to his car and it says Mr. Fusion. So I believe that this kind of thing was like a portable fusion reactor on the car. So maybe the future will be like this.
I love it. Back to the Future invented. Yeah.
Well, he goes and gets literally some, I remember that scene. He's in an alleyway and he gets some like banana peels and things, puts them in the car.
So this might be the future. I mean, the future that some people dreamt of, and that might be our future. But well, the problem is that it's not tomorrow because it takes a long, long time for it to.
That's very cool, though. I remember. I was just gonna say, I remember when my son was a little boy, and we asked him what he wanted Santa to bring him, and he said a watch that I can watch TV on. And this was in the 1990s. There was no such thing. And so, you know, Santa had a really hard time because there was no such thing. And Santa was too busy to invent it that year. But but isn't it interesting that our human imagination and creativity can come up with the solutions that the world needs when we need it? So that brings me hope.
But that doesn't mean that because of this breakthrough, we can and we should stop, you know, what we're doing now to try to reduce carbon emission, because it takes some time, right?
Yeah, we do. Right. This isn't a technology that will solve our problems tomorrow. This is exciting. We can be very excited. We've made a forward progress. But, and maybe this is a moment to even sort of acknowledge that there are still parts in this breakthrough that the measurement of, again, using 2, you know, megajoules turned into 3, that doesn't mean that it's fully taking into account all of the other energies that went into producing the machine, the equipment. Like there's still many more breakthroughs needed to make this commercially viable in a way that is competitive with these other energy sources, be it nuclear, be it coal or natural gas, cost competitive. I don't mean impact competitive, or solar or wind or hydro. You know, there's many more breakthroughs still needed to get there, which means, as you said, Leaky, you know, we need to keep doing the things we're doing now to help change the course of our planetary, you know, trajectory, because we can't just hold our breath for this. This what may be a contributing benefit that helps us in the future, but it's still years away, maybe decades.
Yeah.
So we keep talking and we keep doing.
So we keep talking.
You've been listening to Carbon Sessions, a podcast with carbon conversations for every day with everyone from everywhere in the world. We'd love you to join the Carbon Sessions so you too can share your perspectives from wherever you are. This is a great way for our community to learn from your ideas and experiences, connect, and take action. If you want to add your voice to the conversation, go to thecarbonalmanac.org/podcasts and sign up to be part of a future episode. This podcast is also part of the Carbon Almanac Network. For more information, to sign up for the emails, to join the movement, and to order your copy of the Carbon Almanac, go to thecarbonalmanac.org. Be sure to subscribe and join us here again, as together we can change the world.